When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Put down that smartphone and listen to me. I'm Matthew Milligan, professional musician and lifelong Weird Al fan. Each week, I'm joined by professional podcaster and close personal friend, Matt Kelly, to take a dive off the deep end into the vast career of pop culture icon Weird Al Yankovic on our show, Weird Algorithm. Along with some very special guests from the worlds of music and comedy, we tackle every song, every television appearance, and every bit of sketch comedy Al has produced in chronological order, covering the good old days of My Bologna and Eat It, the fun zone of Tacky and White and Nerdy, and everything in between. As we go, we're ranking the songs, albums, and music videos in the hopes of creating the ultimate guide to a career bigger than the biggest ball of twine in Minnesota. So the next time you're having one of those days stuck in a traffic jam wondering why does this always happen to me, just kick off your sneakers and stick around for a while because we've got it all on Weird Algorithm, available wherever you get your podcasts. And now you know. Was that enough references?
And welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. This week, part of my continuous pick of movies that make me think of summer, we are talking about It's Alive 3, The Island of the Alive. So I have only seen this movie maybe one time prior, and I remembered watching it thinking, there's enough insanity in this movie to make a good Horror Movie Night episode out of it. And
you're wrong.
No, I disagree, because I forgot that there's also a couple of cameos from some of the heavy hitters of Horror Movie Night, like Beef and Mo.
It's not a cameo from Mo. He's like in it the entire time.
Yeah, he is the star.
And Mrs. Firefly. I'm going to throw that out there.
Yeah.
Was that Karen Black? Mrs. Firefly?
Karen Black, yeah. Yeah. From House of a Thousand Corpses, yeah. I had to do some Googling because I thought for sure, like, there's part of me that's like, man, does this movie not make sense out of context of the other movies? Because, like, maybe Moe's character was the dad from a previous movie. But no. Nope. It's just a completely different storyline that just is like, yeah, this is a dad. Take it or leave it.
So one thing I want to say just before we really get into the movie is that so the It's Alive movies are Larry Cohen films.
Yes.
You know what else that he wrote that we have discussed? And I think that we should keep this in mind anytime Larry Cohen comes up, because I think we give him more credit than we should. He wrote Uncle Sam, which is a huge flaming pile of dog shit. I mean, it's great for us, but it's no masterpiece, I'll tell you.
No. And
Larry Cohen,
thing.
I forget that Larry Cohen was kind of a terrible writer, you know, like did he write The Stuff? Because I feel like The Stuff might be his only really
he did The Stuff. He did Q the Winged Serpent,
which
he
is really not fun.
No, I enjoy Q, but it's definitely not one that I would pick for this show. But I'm charmed by anything that has a claymation monster, so I'll watch damn near anything.
That's your very on brand for Matt Kelly.
So I feel like I like this movie the most out of the It's Alive movies, and I've only really watched all of them once, and I think this is the one that has the most sense of humor about the themes while still trying to, like, make a statement. I feel like all the It's Alive movies are trying to make statements. This is the only one that was like, this is insane, let's at least be goofy with it. And you get that right out the gate with the cab driver, who is just so – he's my favorite character in this movie, and he's barely in it. But the movie starts with a cab driver running up to a cop, and he's like, there's a lady giving birth to a baby in my back seat. I don't know what to do. And the cop's like trying to help her give birth, and he's just standing, he's like, this is what I get for picking up pregnant women. Never again. This is just so angry and indignant about the whole thing that's playing out before him. And then the woman gives birth to one of the mutant babies, and the cop screams, it's one of them, and pulls out a gun and just immediately starts to open fire on this baby.
And the woman.
Yeah.
He kills the mom too.
And then he does light her up.
Yeah, and then the baby crawls to a church and dies.
Yeah, because it's like, just give me forgiveness because I am I am not God's creation.
Which is where we jump immediately into the court case on what to do with these mutant babies that have been popping up. And this is where we get our cameo from Beef, the lawyer.
So good.
He's so swarmy. Like, he's just the most, every time you see him, you're like, yeah, he just screams bad guy that should probably die in this movie. And I love that I wrote no one's names down, but Mo from the stuff.
Oh, can I tell you my joke about Mo?
Go for it.
They call me Mo because every time I have a baby, I always want Mo.
He gives the baby a pep talk. He's just listen, these assholes don't want you to be around anymore.
He keeps calling Beef an asshole.
So he goes, so if this asshole wins. I love the whole court scene where he's like reaching out to the baby and everyone's freaking out. And it's just, it's a good little moment of pandemonium where you see that he's not just like being an advocate for these mutant babies. He really does genuinely believe that like things will be okay with good love and nurturing.
But he's terrified of it.
He is terrified of it. It's very strange. He loses the court case. Well, I guess they kind of come to an agreement that if they can't have their babies shouldn't be massacred and should be placed somewhere where no one can be harmed by them, hence the titular island of the alive.
Yeah.
I have some questions about how they're surviving there because they're babies.
They're mutant babies.
Yeah, they're mutant babies. They can eat tree trunks, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know. So I barely paid attention to this movie. I got caught up in my phone a few times and I was like, maybe I should rewind it. But I don't know what happened the first hour. I had no trouble following the storyline.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, they're in court. The judge determines they need to go to an island. Stop paying attention. The scientists are on an island. They get killed. Stop paying attention. And then like 30 minutes later, they're on the island of the alive. And I'm like, I feel like I missed nothing.
Yeah. I feel like...
The pacing is so bad, and I think
the pacing's real rough.
Really bad at pacing. Like that is his greatest sin, in my opinion. It's just that his shit is all about like character development, and I get that, but at the same time, you're trying to make a compelling film, right?
Yeah. Well, Mo does what anyone would do when they break even in a court case, which is go to the carnival.
And
find a prostitute right away. And this is where I decided that the casting choice of Mo to play someone who is described as so attractive he could be an actor is wild. That is a wild casting choice.
Yeah.
I feel like Larry Cohen was like, you know, I just need to do my good deed, and I'm gonna tell Mo that you know, not right out, but I'm going to like imply that I find him to be a very handsome man in this movie. Just trying to make him feel better about himself.
What I'm trying to say is, if I was not a man, I would fuck you. That's where I'm trying to get here.
Is that really? Is this a bit, or is this like literally what Larry Cohen sounded like?
I'm going with a bit.
I would make love to you.
To you. Passionately and very hard. Very
he's
hard.
He's basically Carl from Aqua Teen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Never so much sweat during sex.
Well, we'll get to that next week.
Yeah. As this is going on, we jump to the island where a group of people are showing up at the island to steal the babies. and we get something that I really like and something that I fucking hate. Thing I really like is we get a shot of a claymation baby crawling around. I'm like, all right, that looked pretty cool. But man, fuck the double vision POV shot.
Oh my God, dude.
It drove me nuts every time that it cut to it.
It's just so bad.
It's real bad. It's super unnecessary. Why do they need double vision?
That's their superpower because they're superpower babies.
That's not even a superpower. That seems
like they
very hindering.
Drunk.
Yeah. But this is where we get probably our goriest kill, where like these babies come out and attack these people, and we get like an arm rip off, and then there's the dude that's in the helicopter flying away, and the baby's just like, from like behind, and there's like a quick shot of blood splattering onto the windshield, and then the whole helicopter explodes out of nowhere. It's awesome.
Yeah, well, okay, so here's the thing, is that you may like this scene because it's like the goriest part of the movie, but the guy, I have a note that says something to the effect of like, it's so low budget that you can see the guy with his arm just held to his side underneath his shirt.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah. But I found that. And then there are lines that we're missing with the prostitute, which I just put the brakes on the reality of the movie. And let's go back to the prostitute. And she goes, people think I'm ignorant, but I got cable news on all the time.
All the time.
And I was like, this is so, it's basically like she's exactly the conservative voter that I hate in 2019.
I got the television on. That would never lie to me.
Yeah. And it's always cable news because you can't trust the mainstream media. The lamestream media.
Lamestream. That'll show them.
Yeah.
The prostitute has a couple choice lines. Actually, we did skip over the point where they try to make the analogy that Mo being the father of one of these creatures is almost the equivalency of him having AIDS and not telling somebody.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what Larry Cohen was going for, right?
Yeah, that's the vibe that I got, especially being 87. Like, it feels like it would have been part of that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And I actually think that's a powerful scene at the same time, because it really, like, he really, you know, her just being like, you got to tell people this shit before you infect them. And it's like,
and then she's like, he touched me. I'd be like, he came inside me. Like, it's, yeah. I'd be a lot more worried about that.
Yeah. But I really do like that scene, not for like a horror movie scene at all, but I was like, okay, this is actually like, you know, when horror is doing its social conscious side well, it's something like this. Other people have done it a lot better, a lot better.
But in the early 80s, mid 80s, whatever it was.
Yeah, I mean, this is a conversation that still wasn't really happening then. Yeah. So like, kudos on that. I'll give Larry Cohen the golf clap at least. So somehow Mo gets tied into, because I also kind of drifted in and out, gets tied up with a bunch of scientists to go to the island with them to save his son. And there's a scene where the punchline I saw coming a mile away, and it still made me laugh, where he's talking about the trank dart with the scientists. And he's like, so it's not going to hurt him? He's like, not even a little bit. He's like, you're sure? He's like, positive. And then he just shoots him with the gun. And it got an actual, like, very real laugh out of me. And then when that scientist inevitably wakes up on the island, he's just fucking with them the whole time.
Oh, is this when he's like, we should have brought toys and balloons. Kids love bombs.
Yeah. like he's just a sarcastic asshole, not taking it seriously in the slightest. It almost is like out of nowhere in the movie, he just becomes Bill Murray from Ghostbusters, where like everything's a joke. Like, it's,
well, it started given at the shoe store.
That's true.
Oh, dude, yeah. I have notes from the shoe store. We're ruining children's feet. It's a conspiracy. If we had shoes big enough, we'd ruin your. If we had shoes big enough, we'd ruin your feet too. He's talking to the parents. It's so fucking funny, but so weird.
It's like I actually do enjoy him in this movie. It's the only thing that kept me watching, because it's like,
same.
He talks exactly like Norman Bates in the original Psycho, but if he was doing like stand up.
Yeah.
It's just like a Norman Bates stand-up is an amazing idea.
And I think it would sound a little something like this.
Did we watch the same Psycho?
I mean, hey, we all go a little mad sometimes, am I right?
Oh, that worked out better than I thought it would. So, he goes back to calling everybody assholes when he's trying to have a conversation with his mutant baby in the jungle, and he just says, remember the assholes? These are them still. Different faces. Still assholes. But the mutant babies attack all of the scientists.
Kill everybody.
Leaving the one girl with the most wide, mortified look on her face humanly possible. Like, it actually bothered me a little bit. She looks like Angela at the end of Sleepaway Camp, just laying there.
Yeah, I felt bad. Because it clearly wasn't, like, a dummy. So, like, that poor woman had, like, okay, look shocked, open your mouth, we're going to do a real slow shot.
Wider.
It was like that poor, poor woman.
But this is where Mo gets onto the boat. He gets on the escape boat, and the mutant baby family joins him, and he realizes that his son is the only thing that's keeping him alive at that point, because all the other ones don't trust him. Inevitably, they throw him overboard and give him something to float on so he can get back safely while they commandeer the boat where they need it to go. And this is where
we're missing the fact that it's 5 years later and they are now fully grown mutant babies.
Yeah, I was actually going to say something later on in the episode, because I know how, like, Scott has an issue with, like, showing naked women when they're, like, 20, but they're supposed to be 17. And you see a 5-year-old's breast in this movie. Now, it's clearly a 30-year-old woman, but during the breastfeeding scene, it is just her nipple. I'm like, that is a 5-year-old. That's supposed to be a 5-year-old.
Yeah, that's that. I got a note about that weird that weird look. So now we jump to Mo's ex-wife or girlfriend, whoever she is, the one that birthed the mutant baby,
Karen Black,
and she's got her like shitty greaser boyfriend. And
he is not a boyfriend.
No, whatever he is.
Yeah, he's like a sugar daddy almost.
Yeah.
But he talks about how he found out who she is, and he goes, I was in a bookstore way back where they keep the porn.
Yeah, that scene didn't make you laugh.
He's like, and there you were, staring up at me from the back of a book. Just insane. But the mutant babies go all Toxic Avenger on a bunch of rapists as soon as they arrive on the beach.
Yep.
And I was like, yeah.
That scene was so trauma. Like, even the rapists were just such trauma, like Class of Nukem High gang members.
They're just like laughing maniacally and not really doing anything, thankfully.
Insanely spiked hair, spandex like suits. Like, it was just, I felt like I was watching a trauma movie first.
Well, you know, I gotta say that the most fun I had thematically in this movie is that when you see Mo and Karen Black arguing at the beginning of the movie, she's in this bar and it's that she's working at, and it's like a stand-up bar with, like, I don't know, like, some sort of house band, like a jazz band or something. But then 5 years later, it is now a punk bar. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool.
Punk!
Yeah.
So Mo shows up to try to find his ex-wife because the mutant babies have maybe shown up at work, scared her off. She's ran home to get away. And they think her coworkers are suspicious of him because they think that he's the one that like scared her off in the first place. And then there's this real awkward cut where he like convinces the one coworker to give up where she lives. And she like gives that information real fast. And then it just immediately cuts like the second she finishes saying the address to Karen Black. And it feels like there's more to that scene that ended up on the cutting room floor because it's way too dramatic of a cut for me.
I don't think that that is something that you should be worried about here because
I'm very concerned. Yeah. I need to know what else happened.
Yeah, so I think that story will never be told.
But the mutants are on the roof. Karen Black, Mo,
you're missing
on
the
roof.
Fact that the mutants are actually telepathic.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is like intended to be a reference. Probably not. But the scene when he's carrying Karen Black on the roof looked almost identical to the cabinet of Dr. Caligari. And I was like, that would be such a weird reference if they did it. But like just the way he was like running over the rooftops, and it just looked exactly like it.
It may have been. I feel like Larry Cohen was the type of dude who'd be like, I will make a reference to an infamous like silent film from the 20s.
Yeah. Maybe I can elevate my film by referencing someone else's.
But that's when the cops show up and they start getting tossed off the roof, and the fucking shot of just black sky and slow motion of different guys just going, whoa!
same voiceover. For every single one.
Oh, it's like glorious how bad the green screen effect is.
That's not a green screen.
Or whatever it is. Whatever effect they're doing, it looks like trash, and I am all about it.
Yeah, this movie really is more of a let Matt Kelly explain it to you kind of movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, then they agree to take the baby. So the
because
mutant,
they're dying.
Yeah, they're dying, and they take the baby, which they keep saying is their son, but I feel like it's technically their grandson.
You heard it wrong. It's their grandson.
Okay, so they take the grandson, and then it has this weird, like, The Graduate ending.
Yes, where I had that too. Well, Grandma, and then they go, won't fucking stop. It's so weird.
It's such a strange ending that's so unnecessary. You could just end with them holding the baby and call it a day, but like,
I don't,
for some reason we get this weird car ride conversation.
Yeah, but Larry Cohen had no chill and no like filter. So that's what I'm noticing, because this year, this calendar year, I've watched a lot of his stuff, because it's been on Shudder since he died and things like that, and I've just been like, oh, okay, now I'm understanding. I mean, if I'm gonna go with this style of like 70s, 80s kind of schlockiness, I'm gonna go Hennenlotter, but that's just me. But that's not a...
Oh yeah, he did die. I forgot that Larry Cohen
died. This year, I think.
Put down that smartphone and listen to me. I'm Matthew Milligan, professional musician and lifelong Weird Al fan. Each week, I'm joined by professional podcaster and close personal friend, Matt Kelly, to take a dive off the deep end into the vast career of pop culture icon Weird Al Yankovic on our show, Weird Algorithm. Along with some very special guests from the worlds of music and comedy, we tackle every song, every television appearance, and every bit of sketch comedy Al has produced in chronological order, covering the good old days of My Bologna and Eat It, the fun zone of Tacky and White and Nerdy, and everything in between. As we go, we're ranking the songs, albums, and music videos in the hopes of creating the ultimate guide to a career bigger than the biggest ball of twine in Minnesota. So the next time you're having one of those days stuck in a traffic jam wondering, why does this always happen to me? Just kick off your sneakers and stick around for a while, because we've got it all on Weird Algorithm. Available wherever you get your podcasts. And now you know. Was that enough references?
All right, so I actually don't really know what my double feature would be for this. So I'm gonna just take a shot in the dark and say Vegetable Gremlin. I'm gonna say I'll go with, because Brian did say that it's kind of a trauma movie, and I made a Toxic Avenger reference. I don't think it's on the caliber of the Toxic Avenger, though.
The caliber?
Yeah, I'm going to say it's a little bit of a Surf Nazis Must Die type double feature night. Both have like a beach theme. Both are real bad, but both are pretty good if you've got a group of friends, a pizza, and a case of beer. So
says the guy who's never touched a drop of alcohol in his
life. I had a sip of vodka the other day because I didn't know that it was in the empty water bottle in our fridge. So,
why is there an... what?
My dad's a party animal, man. I don't know what to tell you.
Just leave it in the fucking bottle. That's also why I never leave. I don't like vodka, and I also would never have it in the house because it looks too much like water, and I'm going to take a big swig and be like, oh, now I'm drunk. Like, it's just, yeah. there's no gray area there.
I was like, did someone put, I thought, like, was there vinegar in there? Like, I couldn't figure out what it was. And I finally texted him a couple hours later. And he's like, yeah, it's vodka.
And you're like, well, that explains the hangover.
Yeah.
That tablespoon really fucked me up.
All right. So, Scott, what's your double feature?
Brian, what's your double feature?
So, my double feature, it takes the island idea, but instead of people going to an island to find these monsters, they go to the island to get away from these monsters, but the monster follows them there in Jaws the Revenge.
Oh.
Ooh. Very nice.
Dude, I have no...
All right, Scott, now your turn.
I have no fucking clue. Like, but here's the thing, is that, like, how many mutant baby movies are there? There's this and, like, what, Splice?
There's two other ones. It's Alive and It's Alive Too.
Yeah, I just... aside with the franchise, you dick. I'm trying to find a movie that would, like, be fun, because this movie is charming, I suppose, but it's just not...
I would just go with an aquatic type horror. I know
I got it.
Creatures,
you know what? I got it. We're going The Kindred, because it's the exact same thing, but done
boom.
Better.
There you go. That is the winner of the double features in my heart.
Thank you, but it's just because I'm so obsessed with that movie. I was at a horror con with Mario and another guy yesterday, and there was some Blu-ray. It was for popcorn, and I was like, God, I love popcorn, and I would buy this Blu-ray in a heartbeat if I had a Blu player. And he was like, you don't? And I'm like, no, there's only one movie that is going to finally push me over the edge to buy one. And he was like, what's that? I was like, The Kindred. And he was like, I've never seen it. And I'm like, you're messing out. I've been telling you for a year to watch that movie.
It's great. I think that was like the first one I fell in love with. Like on this.
Which, no. Black Roses was before that.
No. It wasn't. Because I watched The Kindred at Jade's apartment, and I watched Black Roses at me and Jade's house.
Watch The Kindred in Jade's apartment. Call the phone out of
I think it's so disrespectful that we have this podcast when our double features were Surf Nazis Must Die, Jaws the Revenge, and The Kindred, and nobody picked the island of Dr. Moreau, which is an island with mutated humans.
Island of Dr. Moreau with
Val Kilmer.
Yes.
We done talked about it once. Yeah, it was bad.
That was actually on this, not Red Horror Club, right?
Yeah, that was on this.
Could you get a funny episode out of that?
No.
Yeah, I wouldn't think. I feel like it's like too much of a miss of a movie.
Yeah, no, we could not.
I think that we had a good conversation, though. I think there was
did. We discussed it, but it was not funny. It was more just we mostly talked about the documentary
Yeah, it was just the doc that we talked about.
So, real quick before we dive into good things that we had seen this week, Scott, you mentioned that you were at that con, and I know that you love to pick your obscure ass cosplay that sometimes no one gets. Did a lot of people get the Torn Prince, or were you just walking around like a mutated jock all day?
Well, so here's the thing. I'm glad that you asked, because you know how I have this quasi-ironic but maybe also serious belief that we live in the Matrix? You know, it's like a simulation, computer simulation, and they're just fucking with us?
Yeah.
I went, and somebody knew who I was, and... Nice. He was like, let me introduce you to someone. So he walks me over to this vendor who his name is Alan Tuskies.
Is that the actor who played the Torn Prince?
No, it's the guy that worked on the prosthetics for the Torn Prince.
Oh, shit.
He lives in Cleveland. Like, how wild is that? Like, that I pick an obscure costume... And the obscure guy that made the obscure costume or worked on it on the set lives in town and was at this convention. It's not a big convention.
Yeah, that's hysterical. That's awesome.
Fucking wild.
Was he like super excited?
He's kind of an older dude, so I had a hard time gauging his enthusiasm. Because he's jaded as fuck, but he said he thought that I did a really good job. And I mean, this was my first sculpt and I'm learning, and my first paint on liquid latex. And I think that I could have done a thinner prosthetic and it would have been better, blah, blah. Like I have a lot of things that I'm learning, you know, but he gave me his card and his phone number and he was like, call me. And I was like, oh my God. So I'm going to try and have him be like a mentor. It's nice. Just weird. Like life is funny. And I really love the fact that this is how this whole doing my own costumes, well, doing my own latex and resin pours and stuff started. Matt and I went to Pop Rock and Horror back in May, the end of May, and I met a guy named Joshua who was dressed up as Uncle Frank from Hellraiser. We hit it off. We were talking all weekend, and the conversation continued on Instagram, and he has tons of information on how to do it yourself. And so we weren't going to do Pop Rock and Horror. And then Scott Hewitt put it together and Matt was like, why don't you come down and I could make it happen. So I went down and did a costume there. And it's just like funny how life goes. And I wasn't going to do another costume. And then I just did another costume and met the guy that did the character. It's just
it's weird what this show has given each one of us, because like I've gotten to meet some really cool people, but not really anyone who's like going to help elevate what I do. It's just like, oh, I got to meet this cool person. You've gotten to like have these cool interactions with people that tie directly into like your love of music and art. And Brian got to strike out in front of one of his favorite actresses.
Yeah.
So the podcast has been really good to all three of us.
Man, oh man. I actually just talked about not getting a chance to meet Christina Ricci.
All right. So what have you guys watched, listened to, read, etc. that was a positive in your day?
Oh, last night, man, I watched Wreck-It Ralph Breaks the Internet.
It's so fun, but it will make you tear up just a little bit.
It is.
Guys, stop with the fucking Pixar shit.
Dude, it's not the saddest Pixar, Scott. It's just so fucking funny. I couldn't believe how hard we laughed and like how well they just kind of mocked the internet.
And yeah, the princesses steal that movie.
The princess scene is super, super fucking funny. It was just like, wow, Disney's making fun of themselves. Like, I thought it was really funny. Like, when the princesses were trying to figure out she's a princess, and they're like, does everyone think the only reason you got where you were was because a man came to your rescue? And she's like, yes. And they're like, oh my God, she is a princess.
Well, I think my favorite joke in that whole scene, though, is when Maradon from Brave starts talking, and it's in a super thick Irish accent. No one can understand it. And Penelope's like, did any of you guys understand that? And they go, no, she's from the other studio.
That's fun.
Like, it's just, it's so meta, but it also really tackles, I feel like the growth of Ralph in that movie is relatable to a depressing level at some points, where it's just like not letting your friends like live their own lives. Cause you're just like, but I need you in my life right now.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, I'm guilty of that sometimes. I went into the movies and I saw Yesterday.
Oh, which, how was that?
Which was, so it's fine. It's Danny Boyle, so it's got Danny Boyle's like really unique editing style. So it's visually interesting. The story is whatever, but if you want an excuse to just listen to 2 hours of the best songs by the Beatles, it's a really good way to kill 2 hours listening to the best songs of the Beatles. So I had fun. It was fun. It's not going to be in like my top 10 or anything, but I'm glad that I saw it, and I will probably buy the soundtrack because the covers were really, really good.
Yeah, it seemed like a Amazon Prime thing where it's like, I'll wait until this is free on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if I didn't get to go to these for free through the AMC card, this would definitely have been a I'll wait for the release movie. And I feel justified in it was a wait for the release movie, but it definitely wasn't a don't see at all.
Gotcha. Cool.
All right, Scotty.
So Megan started watching a docuseries by Jordan Peele, produced by Jordan Peele, about Lorena Bobbitt.
Oh,
Brian loved that.
I loved it.
I caught half of it last night after I got back from the con while she was like chilling out and I was just getting all the prosthetic adhesive off my face. And is it me or was John Bobbitt plastered during his interviews?
Probably.
So yeah, I don't know how I feel. I mean, I think it's really well made. I just don't know how I feel about the people involved because I think, is it multiple episodes or is it just one long?
It's multiple episodes and like it, I would strongly suggest finishing it because
Megan will. I was kind of half involved because she was watching it and I was doing other stuff, but I could hear and I like stuck my head in a bunch.
Yeah, like they were very good storytellers and it, but what makes them such good storytellers is I'm afraid, like after watching, I'm like, man, I'm afraid people are going to watch the first episode, call bullshit on it, and then not finish it because they definitely try to make you think one way on like the first episode and then completely change your mind the other episodes without giving away too many spoilers.
I mean, I know what happens in the end. You know, his dick gets cut off.
Yeah, but I'm talking about like villain, you know, villain versus victim. Yeah.
I feel like they're really setting it up to fuck with you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was really well done.
Yeah. I mean, I was impressed by it. I'm not a documentary person. Yeah. Megan is, but I am by proxy, you know. I mean, I like documentaries. I just don't seek them out. Megan does, and I watch them and enjoy them.
Well, speaking of really good things, we just finished talking about Island of the Alive. It's Alive Part 3, released in 1987 and was picked by me. Join us next week when we talk about another sequel that came out in the 90s, though, that, you know, we're going to have to take our time to really focus in on what we want to talk about with that one. But if you want to hear more conversations about how much we love summer horror films, or at least I do because they're all of my picks until the end of August, then head on over to our Patreon, patreon.com/HMN podcast, and listen to our little 10-minute conversation about how much we love these summer horror films. In the meantime, you can go and check out our social media at HMN Podcast on all of our social media feeds and our website, hmnpodcast.com. Send us some emails. We are doing Listener Submit It Month very, very soon, although we may have possibly picked the movies by the time this comes out, but who knows? Put them in just in case, and we'll save them for the following month that we do that. And that is all. So we'll be back next week. Bye.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.
Put down that smartphone and listen to me. I'm Matthew Milligan, professional musician and lifelong Weird Al fan. Each week, I'm joined by professional podcaster and close personal friend, Matt Kelly, to take a dive off the deep end into the vast career of pop culture icon Weird Al Yankovic on our show, Weird Algorithm. Along with some very special guests from the worlds of music and comedy, we tackle every song, every television appearance, and every bit of sketch comedy Al has produced in chronological order, covering the good old days of My Bologna and Eat It, the fun zone of Tacky and White and Nerdy, and everything in between. As we go, we're ranking the songs, albums, and music videos in the hopes of creating the ultimate guide to a career bigger than the biggest ball of twine in Minnesota. So the next time you're having one of those days stuck in a traffic jam wondering why does this always happen to me, just kick off your sneakers and stick around for a while because we've got it all on Weird Algorithm, available wherever you get your podcasts. And now you know. Was that enough references?
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.